Even before Oregon became a state in 1859, people from China were arriving in the region. They came to work and sent money back home, a home that had problems with war and some other issues. And from a peak in the late 1800s, the southern Oregon Chinese population fell to almost nothing. Chinese New Year is still celebrated in Jacksonville, as it will be this weekend. And the Southern Oregon Historical Society commemorates the Chinese presence in an exhibit at the Rogue Valley Mall running into April. It's called Courage in the Golden Valley, Southern Oregon Chinese History. Amy Drake is the Director of Exhibitions and Community Engagement for SOHS and the curator of the exhibit and our guest once again in the studio. Amy, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It would seem like a vast subject to tackle in a single display. And you laugh. And so, yes, I can imagine. This took a while to put together.
It took about a year from the inception of the idea to the actual exhibition opening. And, yeah, it is a vast subject. We could probably – there are 10 different sort of topics included in the exhibit. We could probably have done an in-depth exhibit on each of those topics. So this exhibit is more of an overview. A highlight of Chinese history in Southern Oregon.
Well, given all the different subtopics within that, I mean, is there a particular theme to what's in the display?
Well, it comes from the title, Courage in the Golden Valley. Really, we partnered with the Southern Oregon Chinese Cultural Association as well as the SOU Laboratory of Anthropology, so the archaeology department, or SULA, which is what I'll call
SULA,
them.
Right, yeah.
From here on out.
Right.
And the theme is really that Chinese workers who chose to come to Southern Oregon to work, to earn money to send back home to their families, they had more opportunities than has been sort of talked about or discussed in prior public interpretations of this history. They had more of an active role in what happened to them, how they chose to live their lives. Yeah. So it's really trying to pull that out.
So there was some discrimination, and we can talk about
absolutely.
That in depth. But the fact is that even so, within the strictures placed upon them, they had some freedom of movement and ability to determine their own fates.
They did, and they were able to get around some of the discriminating laws as well.
How early did people begin arriving from China? It sounds like it was pretty much coincidental with the arrival of white settlers from the east.
I mean, absolutely. It was with the gold rush, which is essentially why Jacksonville in this area was settled. So it's probable that the first Chinese settlers landed in San Francisco and then took another steamship to Crescent City and then took the stagecoach probably down what is the Redwood Highway or Highway 199 now. So they would have come through Cave Junction. There was a large Chinese community in what used to be Waldo. There was one in Kirbyville, or what is now Kirbyville, and then came up to Jacksonville, probably by mid-1850s.
So they kind of worked their way, it sounds like, from mining district to mining district.
Basically, mm-hmm. Looking for gold.
And so but I've heard interesting stories about the Chinese miners in particular, that they were willing to work claims that a lot of white miners had just said, "Hey, we're done here. You know, this is played out. We can't do this anymore."
Mm-hmm.
Is that square with the knowledge that you were able to pull out of this?
It absolutely does, but it's not the full story. So there's a lot of complicated things going on all at the same time. So Chinese miners were willing to work the mines that white miners were no longer working. They thought they had played out. Chinese miners were trying to think of how to say this, but Chinese miners would go back and use different mining techniques, which I'm not an expert on, don't want to go into, but they would use different mining techniques to find gold that the white miners had missed. And again, there's multiple things going on here. So there were laws in place beginning in the 1860s or so that prevented Chinese miners from owning mining claims. Chinese miners and Chinese workers in general had to pay higher taxes in order to work in the area. So Chinese miners were basically shut out of owning mines by Jackson County and Oregon state laws. However, when these mines played out, the white miners needed to sell the mines. So in order to make a profit on them, they would sell them to the Chinese miners. So the Chinese then had an opportunity that they wouldn't have had otherwise, and they took it and were able to continue mining, develop new mining techniques, and find more gold.
Interesting. So essentially waiting for an opportunity there and seizing upon
mm-hmm,
it.
Exactly.
Making a lot of use of it. Again, with the timing, it's interesting. They arrived the same time as many of the white settlers, but obviously having a portion of society and having rights in the society, different things. And how strict were the laws? You mentioned higher taxes. There were exclusions as well on certainly on citizenship and a lot of other things, too.
It's hard to say how strict the laws were, because in the documented historical record, we know what the laws, like we have a record of what the laws were, but we don't, what we don't have a record of, this would have been more of an oral thing, would have been how the laws were ignored or twisted or, again, just ignored. We do, I mean, obviously the Chinese Exclusion Act was passed in 1882, which was a national act, and there had been a series of laws leading up to it. With the passage of the Chinese Exclusion Act, the reaction here, or at least in Jacksonville, was the tone of the newspaper article written about it is basically celebratory. It's the May 6th, 1882, Oregon Centennial out of Jacksonville, and they take up half of the entire front page of the newspaper that day, just reprinting the law verbatim. So they're excited about it. And that shows the general attitude of the Jacksonville community at that time towards the Chinese. And that's when you see the Chinese population decrease here as well.
So that explains then why this thing that hit a peak. I mean, we're talking a large percentage of Jackson County population by 1870. And by the mid-1880s, then, the exodus begins. And it's entirely because of this national exclusion law.
I wouldn't say it's entirely because, but it's definitely related to it. And there's another law passed in 1892, the Geary Act, which is sort of a renewal of the Chinese Exclusion Act. And that is stricter.
All right. Much more to talk about with Amy Drake. We're talking about the Chinese people in Southern Oregon as an exhibit by the name Courage in the Golden Valley, Southern Oregon Chinese History. Amy Drake works for the Southern Oregon Historical Society and is the curator of the exhibit, now open at the Rogue Valley Mall. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange by phone or by email. We'll come back and talk more about Chinese history in the region, and you can join us when we return in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Amy Drake, the Director of Exhibitions and Community Engagement at the Southern Oregon Historical Society, also the curator of the annual exhibit now up at the Rogue Valley Mall called Courage in the Golden Valley, Southern Oregon Chinese History, commemorating the years of Chinese workers in Southern Oregon from about the mid-19th century till about the couple decades short of the end of the 19th century, largely focused around Jacksonville, but some other communities as well. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I was very surprised. I always wondered what the number was, and I'd seen recently that the 1870 census indicated about 13% of the Jackson County population was Chinese people, which is quite comparable to the Latino population today. So
exactly.
A very significant minority.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's, the census, so it doesn't include people who were missed in the census, who might have been out in the Applegate working on mining claims.
So that's a lot of Chinese people in the Rogue Valley at that time, Chinese workers who came here to work mining claims. Did some of them work on the railroad as well? Because we did have railroads being built into the region at that time, too.
They did. They worked on the railroads here in the 1880s. That's when the railroad was built through here. We have less, at SOHS, we have less extensive records about the railroad workers, but we know they did. There was a mining contractor there was a railroad labor contractor out of Ashland named Hua Chung, who would pull together workers for railroad labor.
Hua Chung, I notice, is one of the names that crops up, which raises the question then, since we tend to do this monolithic Chinese workers thing. I mean, are a lot of individual names known? I mean, given that there was a lot of institutional racism against Chinese people in the region at the time, I just wonder how many names actually got recorded and how many otherwise are just sort of a faceless mob to the white folks.
It's a combination. Unfortunately, a lot of names weren't recorded. As you mentioned, there was a lot of what we think of as racism at the time. And there, you can read in old newspaper articles that directly just insult, make fun of the Chinese language as being gibberish. And there's a general disrespect for the Chinese at the time as well. And so they just, it seems like they just didn't bother to record their names. We do have names documented in census records or in Peter Britt rented a lot of his properties to the Chinese. And so we have names there, but we also have many of Peter Britt's photographs of Chinese individuals, and not all of them have names connected with them. So it's a toss-up. In the exhibit, we do try to draw out the stories of the few individuals that we have. So Hua Chong is one of them. We talk about how he's a railroad labor contractor. He lived in Ashland. He was a merchant, so he was able to bring his family over. We do try to pull out that these people were individuals. They had their own stories. They had their own experiences.
Hua Chong is notable for that, for having his family here, I understand, because most of these were men who were sending money back home to their wives still in China, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. All right. So Hua Chong, and how much family did he have with him?
He brought his wife, and they had a daughter and a son.
Mm-hmm. So a family of four. And then do mm-hmm. we know what ended up happening to Hua Chong?
I believe he lived in Ashland for his entire life and passed away there. I believe he was buried in one of the Ashland cemeteries. Yeah.
Okay. And we have a question here from Jeannie in Medford, wants to know if you know anything about the cemetery in Jacksonville. I heard there was a mass grave there for Chinese workers.
There was a mass grave there, and I don't know the specifics on it. I believe the Chinese who were there were disinterred and their bodies were sent back to China. I don't remember off the top of my head when that happened, but yes, there was a mass grave.
Okay, the repatriation of the bones, we know from a previous discussion on the exchange, is a big deal for Chinese culture.
Exactly.
That's something I want to make sure they do. So, mm-hmm. But was there anything then along, I mean, when we talk about mass graves, though, it makes you wonder if there's anything along the lines of the massacre of 34 Chinese men killed on the Snake River. Was there anything quite like that in Southern Oregon that we're aware of?
No, we're not aware of any violence to that scale. There was violence, there was discrimination, but not 34 people massacred. Luckily, that didn't happen here.
Okay. So we talked about Hua Chong, the labor contractor. Jin Lin was another name that comes up. Tell us a bit about him.
Jin Lin was probably the most successful Chinese man in Southern Oregon. Probably is an understatement. He came over to Southern Oregon in the 1860s or so, and he was here through 1894. During those 3 decades, he started out as a miner. He became a mining labor contractor, so he found other miners to work in mines. He would do supply orders for the miners, so he's also sort of acting as, not quite as a merchant, but close enough to be acting as a merchant. He's rumored to have introduced hydraulic mining to Southern Oregon. By the time he left to go back to China in 1894, he had about $2 million in the Beekman Bank, which is probably about $20 million now.
In today's dollars, yeah.
Yeah, so extremely wealthy, extremely successful. There were lots of rumors that he was either murdered the minute he stepped off the boat in China or just died alone and impoverished in China. We know he passed away in 1897, but we're pretty sure that those rumors are just rumors and that he lived out the rest of his life happily.
We're talking to Amy Drake from the Southern Oregon Historical Society about Courage in the Golden Valley, Southern Oregon Chinese History, on display now at the Rogue Valley Mall, 800-838-3760. If you'd like to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned some Peter Britt photography. Did a lot of Chinese people, Chinese workers get photographed?
It's hard to say. We have about 40 photographs of Chinese individuals in our collection. And that's just what's in our collection and what was saved. Many of these are Peter Britt photos, which is why we have them. And part of why some of these photographs were taken was with the 1892 Geary Act that I mentioned before, any Chinese individual had to have a photograph taken in order to remain in America.
Registration.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it sounds like quite a few obstacles to trying to pull together the bits and pieces of the history here. It sounds like a lot of blind alleys when you start picking up the threads of the stories of individuals, or at least more broadly of Chinese residency in the region.
Yeah. So SOHS, we do have some some archives and some photographs, but what really helped us pull this story together, and we do have some secondary sources of what white people at the time or later thought about the Chinese, but what really helped us pull together the story was is the current archaeology that Chelsea Rose of SOU is conducting in Jacksonville. They found various artifacts that fleshed out the stories. They're doing more, and fleshing out those stories is so important because the artifacts that are found, like they found medicine bottles, they found pieces of like writing instruments, and they add a new perspective. So, for example, the writing instruments, there was this rumor that when the Chinese workers who were here were uneducated, were completely impoverished, couldn't write, didn't write, and lots of their written documents wouldn't have been saved. But Chelsea has these writing utensils. She's found writing utensils. She's found containers that would have had ink in them that have been scientifically analyzed and shown to have ink in them. So we know the Chinese were writing, and it adds more depth to the story.
I was going to ask you about a connection there. As you mentioned, relying upon SULA, the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology,
yes,
where Dr. Chelsea Rose works, and a lot of interesting stuff going on out in Jacksonville in the last couple of years. So digs into old sites where there was once Chinese residency, and what do you know? All sorts of artifacts crop up that helps you tell the story. Mm-hmm. How vast a collection of things connected to Chinese history in the region do you have out at SOHS? I mean, we talked about the stuff that you have room for at the Rogue Valley Mall, which is not a great deal, but I mean, is there like eight pieces in storage for each one that is out?
Probably. Yeah, we have at the Rogue Valley Mall, we're inside of a vacant store, and we have about 100 artifacts on display and about 20 photographs included in the exhibit. And our entire Chinese history collection is probably more along the lines of 400 artifacts and 60 to 70 photographs.
Okay, so all kinds of fun. What's the stuff that I mean, there must be one centerpiece that made you as the curator go, wow, no question, this has got to be part of it.
We have a shopping list. It was saved in the Peter Brick collection, and it's a shopping list. So it shows, it's in Chinese, it's probably in Cantonese. But I mean, we have the shopping list. So first of all, it shows that the Chinese who were here at the time were writing. And it shows, it's a shopping list that it's probably written in 1881. And it seems like we had an individual attempt to translate it for us. It seems like it's an order for miners who are working out in the Applegate through a merchant in Jacksonville to a store in San Francisco. And it shows the foodstuffs and supplies that they would have wanted, that they did want. I mean, there's multiple quantities of these things. And it shows, in addition to showing the writing, it shows that there's this like interdependent relationship between the miners and possibly Jin Lin. It's possibly his name included on this, to the individual in Jacksonville, to San Francisco. So this network of people working together to build the community, to help the workers, I mean, to sell things to the workers as well. But yeah.
So this is more than just the shopping list for a family going to the grocery store. This is like several months worth of supplies, it sounds like, for a
exactly.
bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Fascinating stuff. And then, wow, interpretation sounds like it got tricky with that one.
It did. We tried to... our original goal was to have a full translation of the list, but we weren't able to do that. And so we have the list, and we talk about how it is a written document, and that's important, and that it shows this community network.
Are there some pieces that exist in the SOHS archives that you pull things out and go, well, this is clearly related to when there were Chinese people living in the region, but can't really say what it is? It just was never cataloged with enough information?
No, I think we have good enough records on everything, all of the Chinese artifacts that we do have, to be able to say either what it is or who it was connected to.
And so where specifically at the Rogue Valley Mall? You mentioned in a vacant storefront. Which end of the Rogue Valley Mall?
It is between JCPenney and Macy's Home on the first level, and more specifically, it's next to GNC.
Okay, so ground floor, and then down toward JCPenney.
Yeah.
All right, in a storefront. How well marked is the front of it so people can get in? And what hours of the day is it open?
Whenever the mall is open, the exhibit's open, and we have a sign on top of the store and a banner in the store window, and you can see in. We're across from Maurice's.
And how long is it open?
We will be there till April 17th.
Okay. So it sounds like quite an effort, really, to pull all this together.
It really was. Yeah. It was myself. I had an exhibitions assistant. And then basically all of my coworkers contributed in one way or another. I mean, the collections department double-checked our cataloging for all of the artifacts. The library staff and the library volunteers found and scanned photographs. Everyone from the staff to SOHS volunteers to SOHS board members offered to help edit the text. Like, it's, yeah, I really appreciate everyone's help.
Quite a task. It's called Courage in the Golden Valley, Southern Oregon Chinese History on display at the Rogue Valley Mall into the month of April. And Chinese New Year will be celebrated on Saturday in Jacksonville with a parade and a fun run and a few other events. Amy Drake is the Director of Exhibitions and Community Engagement and the curator of the display from the Southern Oregon Historical Society. Thanks for joining us once again, Amy.
Yeah, thank you.